I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's November 17th, and we have a lot to talk about. And the first thing that I want to talk about is a bit of carryover from last week's episode, when I talked with U.S. Air Force veteran Carla Clay. After last week's episode aired, I heard from Izzy, who's also a veteran and a member of the Real Talk MS community, and Izzy asked me to remind any veteran who's living with MS that they also qualify to be a member of the PVA, or Paralyzed Veterans of America. Izzy explained to me that a lot of veterans still think that the PVA is only for veterans with spinal injuries, but the PVA is also open to veterans living with chronic illness like MS and ALS. So if you're a veteran and you're living with multiple sclerosis, you might want to check out the resources available through the PVA. You can find them online at pva.org, and I'll include a link to their website in today's show notes. A few years ago, repairing the nervous system and fixing the damage caused by MS seemed more like science fiction than real science. But today, remyelination holds real promise as a strategy for restoring lost function and slowing or even stopping MS progression. In today's episode, we're going to take a deep dive into the current state of remyelination research. We'll talk with my guests about where we are, where we're heading, and why things appear to be so promising. And we'll be learning about remyelination from two of the foremost MS and remyelination experts in the world. Joining me today is Dr. Jeffrey Cohen, the Hazel Pryor Hostetler Professor of Neurology at the Cleveland Clinic and the director of the Cleveland Clinic's Mellon Center for Multiple Sclerosis Treatment and Research. Dr. Cohen also heads the Cleveland Clinic's Experimental Therapeutics Program, where he's been involved in a number of clinical trials, many of which have led to new therapies for MS. Also joining me to talk about the science of remyelination and how we got to where we are today is Dr. Ian Duncan, a neuroscientist and professor of neurology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Dr. Duncan was honored this year when the National MS Society and the American Academy of Neurology awarded him the 2020 Distal Prize for MS Research. Professor Duncan's research has focused on myelin repair, and his work provided the first unequivocal evidence that remyelination could restore lost neurological function. Dr. Duncan's studies have really laid the groundwork for current and future clinical trials of remyelinating therapies for people living with MS. But before we get to my conversations with Dr. Cohen and Dr. Duncan, there are a few other things that you should know about. This past September, I told you about the Atlas of MS, the most extensive global MS prevalence study to date. The study was conducted by the MS International Federation, and it showed that the number of people living with MS has increased in every region of the world. Well, the Atlas of MS has now been published in the Multiple Sclerosis Journal, and if you've downloaded the free Real Talk MS app from the Apple App Store or Google Play, you'll find a copy of the Atlas of MS under the Bonus Content tab in the app. And if you haven't yet downloaded the Real Talk MS app, please consider this your invitation to do so. I always have my eye out for interesting non-audio content that I'm happy to share with you. So if you haven't already, I hope you'll take this opportunity to download the Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android device. Comorbidities are other disease conditions that you might be experiencing in addition to MS. They might include depression, anxiety disorder, high blood pressure, diabetes, irritable bowel syndrome, and others. And research has shown that people living with MS are more likely to also be dealing with one or more of these other conditions. Dr. Ruth Ann Murray is the director of the Multiple Sclerosis Clinic at the University of Manitoba, And I came across a short but really informative video of Dr. Mary talking about comorbidities in people living with MS. I'll include a link to that video in today's show notes. And I also want to take this opportunity to announce that Dr. Mary has been selected as the incoming vice chair of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee. Dr. Mary will be joining Dr. Robert Fox, a neurologist at the Mellen Center for Multiple Sclerosis at the Cleveland Clinic, and a member of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee, who's been selected as the incoming chair of the Scientific Steering Committee. As a member of the committee, I want to extend my welcome to Dr. Mary and my congratulations to both. I'm excited to see them lead the Alliance into its next chapter. Speaking of progressive MS, I want to give you a reminder that this Thursday and Friday, November 19th and 20th, I'll be moderating the European MS Platform's annual conference. This year, of course, it's a virtual conference. It's aimed at people affected by MS, and the theme of this year's conference is Understanding Progressive MS. The conference will feature some outstanding presentations on a broad range of topics from aging with progressive MS, to current trends in progressive MS rehabilitation, to dealing with the emotions that come from living with progressive MS. And if you're between the ages of 18 and 35, the Friday afternoon session is devoted to the issues specifically facing young people with MS. I hope you'll find time to join me at EMSP Virtual 2020, and I'll include a link to the online registration information in today's show notes. I also want to remind you that next week, from November 23rd through the 28th, the MS Society of Canada is hosting the 2020 MS Connect Conference. This is another conference that's specifically aimed at people affected by MS, and this year, MS Connect is virtual, so you can join from anywhere. You'll hear top MS researchers talking about restoring lost function, managing cognitive dysfunction, managing fatigue, and living well with MS. I'm looking forward to participating in MS Connect on Wednesday, November 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, when I'll be in conversation with Dr. Jack Entel, a clinical neurologist who coordinates the Multiple Sclerosis Research and Treatment Program at the Montreal Neurological Institute. Dr. Entel's also a professor at McGill University. He served as chairman of the Medical Advisory Board of the MS Society of Canada from January 2004 to 2007, and from 2004 to 2006, he served as president of the International Society of Neuroimmunology. Dr. Entel was a recipient of the 2005 Distal Award for MS Research from the National MS Society and the American Academy of Neurology. He's currently the editor for the Americas of the Multiple Sclerosis Journal, and needless to say, this is a conversation that I'm looking forward to. So whether you happen to live in Canada or elsewhere, I hope you'll find time to virtually attend what's going to be an excellent event. You'll find a link to the online registration information for this conference in today's show notes. And speaking of conversations that I'm looking forward to, I'm especially pleased to share two recent conversations that I've had with two top experts in MS and specifically in understanding remyelination as a means of restoring the function that MS takes away. First up, we'll hear from my guest, Dr. Jeffrey Cohen. Just a few years ago, the subject of remyelination was more dream than reality. But that's changed, and today, myelin repair holds real promise as a strategy to restore lost function and reduce or even stop MS progression. My guest today is the Hazel Pryor Hostetler Professor of Neurology at the Cleveland Clinic and the Director of the Cleveland Clinic's Mellen Center for Multiple Sclerosis Treatment and Research, Dr. Jeffrey Cohen. Dr. Cohen also heads the Cleveland Clinic's Experimental Therapeutics Program, where he's been involved in a large number of clinical trials, many of which have led to new therapies for multiple sclerosis. When it comes to remyelination, One of the things we know is that remyelination does occur in people with MS, but it generally occurs earlier in the disease, and when it does occur, the remyelinated myelin tends not to be as functional as the original myelin that was damaged by MS. And as we began our conversation, I asked Dr. Cohen to explain what happens in MS that seems to limit or stop remyelination from happening more naturally.
The oligodendrocyte progenitor cells function less robustly as they get older, as do other repair mechanisms in the body. We think the abnormal inflammatory environment not only causes damage, but interferes with repair. And chronically, the damage that occurs in multiple sclerosis may lead to scarring within the central nervous system. And that scarring also interferes with efficient recruitment of the stem cells into areas that need to be remyelinated and their function once they get there. So there's a number of different aspects that interfere with it.
We have a number of disease-modifying therapies that target inflammation in the brain and spinal cord. They've been shown to limit MS relapses and limit or at least delay progression. What's keeping any of these disease-modifying therapies from stimulating remyelination?
Well, so the currently approved medications primarily are targeted at immune mechanisms. So their principal purpose is to reduce the abnormal inflammation within the nervous system, ultimately, and to reduce the amount of damage that inflammation causes. So their purpose is not primarily to promote repair, although they may indirectly assist with repair by making the environment less hostile to repair. But we think that their mechanism is probably different than what's needed to promote repair. So other avenues are being explored to try to promote repair, including remyelination. So it's probably going to take different approaches than the disease-modifying therapies.
Which brings me to my next question. Are there things that you see on the research front that may lead to promising remyelination treatments?
Well, I think there's sort of three categories of potential approaches. So one is would be medications. So there have been a number of medications that have been identified that stimulate some aspect of the biology of myelin-producing cells that one might think would be beneficial and promote remyelination. So those include things like opicinumab, anti-LINGO monoclonal antibody, bexarotene, nanocrystalline gold, and then some medications that have been approved for other purposes, such as clemastine or tamoxifen. So that's one category. A second category would be cell-based approaches. So that includes transplantation of cells that are the myelin producing, that become the myelin producing cells. So that might include embryonic stem cells and oligodendrocyte progenitor cells, or transplantation of stem cells that indirectly facilitate remyelination by supporting the intrinsic remyelinating cells. So that an example of that would be mesenchymal stem cells, which provide trophic nutritional support to the stem cells. And then a third category would be electrical stimulation. We now know that one of the signals that the axon sends out to be myelinated and to be remyelinated are the nerve impulses. But when an axon, a nerve fiber, is demyelinated, it goes silent. And there have been some laboratory studies that suggest that electrical stimulation of demyelinated nerves may stimulate the remyelinating mechanisms. And so there are some trials of that are ongoing. So there's three areas of research targeting remyelination.
I'd like to talk about stem cell therapy for a moment. It's a subject that people affected by MS have a keen interest in. Just a couple of weeks ago, the National MS Society published their recommendation of stem cell therapy, specifically autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, or AHSCT, as a viable treatment for relapsing forms of MS. Can you explain what AHSCT is?
Right. So one has to remember that there are many kinds of stem cells and many kind of stem cell-based therapies. One general category would be stem cells that in some way are involved with repair of the nervous system. So that's one category. And then there's the other broad category that you just referred to, hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, which is transplantation of the blood-forming stem cells, the hematopoietic stem cells, as part of a very potent anti-inflammatory mechanism of action. So hematopoietic stem cell transplantation is a multi-step process. The first step is mobilization and harvesting of the hematopoietic stem cells. Usually now it's done from the blood. Then the second step, which is called conditioning, which is the administration of very high doses of chemotherapy with the purpose being to eliminate the immune system that's leading to multiple sclerosis. And then the third stage, which is the readministration of the hematopoietic stem cells back to try to accelerate recovery of the immune system and the other blood-forming cells that also sometimes get damaged. And the purpose of, in this case, the stem cell transplantation is to promote recovery and lessen the complications from what really is the treatment of MS in this case, which is the conditioning regimen. And then the ultimate rationale for hematopoietic stem cell transplantation is to eliminate the diseased immune system that's producing damage in MS, and then allowing it to recover with the hope that it will recover with a more normal function. In other words, it's been thought of as rebooting the immune system.
Who would be considered a good candidate for hematopoietic stem cell transplantation?
So there have been, at this point, actually quite a few studies of hematopoietic stem cell transplantation in MS. Each of them individually had some shortcomings, but in aggregate, they give us a pretty good idea of what the benefits are and who is most likely to experience those benefits and what the risks are and who's most likely to experience those complications. So the aspect of MS that hematopoietic stem cell transplantation addresses is the focal lesion activity, the aspect of MS that leads most directly to relapses and to new or active lesions on MRI. So the sort of person that would be most likely to benefit is someone who has active relapsing MS, they're having frequent relapses or frequently active MRIs, and who has not responded adequately to one of the available disease-modifying therapies. And on the other side, it's someone who's relatively young, does not have other medical conditions, and who does not have too severe disability, because those are people that are less likely to benefit, unfortunately, and that who are more likely to experience the complications.
Stem cell therapy is also referred to as regenerative medicine. I've read that there's been some evidence presented that exercise can actually increase brain volume. So I guess I have a two-part question here. First, is this true? And if it is true, what type of exercise produces that sort of outcome?
Well, so when I was talking about potential remyelinating approaches, I probably should have included a fourth category, which is healthy living, one might say. So, which includes a good diet, maintaining a good nutritional state, addressing other medical conditions, particularly diabetes, heart disease, vascular disease, avoiding smoking, and then fourth, exercise. We know that exercise has a number of health benefits, including in people in general, but including people with MS. So we think that the optimal exercise regimen for somebody with MS includes stretching to preserve mobility and flexibility, some resistance training, so weight training, as it were, to build up muscle strength and muscle mass. And then third, cardiovascular exercise, something that gets your heart rate up. Now, people with MS sometimes have limitations, and they have to adapt their exercise program to those limitations. So that's where physical therapists frequently can be helpful to help develop an effective exercise program. And then to answer your specific question, yes, the benefits of exercise are real. They don't just make people feel better, but it makes them healthier, which allows for more effective remyelination and regeneration. And it also can be shown by improved function, neurologic function, and by improvements on MRI measures such as brain volume. So in short, exercise has a lot of potential benefits.
Well, Dr. Jeffrey Cohen, on a personal note, I'd like to share that years ago, my wife was fortunate enough to be treated for something specific to her MS at the Cleveland Clinic. And without question, from the moment we made the initial appointment on, she experienced the highest level of patient care that she experienced over the entire course of her disease. You and your entire team set the bar incredibly high. So thank you for all that you do, and it's a lot to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Well, thanks for inviting me, and thanks for those nice comments.
My next guest is Professor Ian Duncan, the recipient of the 2020 Distel Prize for MS Research. The Distel Prize was awarded to Professor Duncan in acknowledgement of his groundbreaking research in myelin repair. His discoveries serve as the foundational science behind the remyelination clinical trials that are taking place right now. In a moment, we'll hear my conversation with Professor Ian Duncan. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Duncan, and congratulations on being named this year's recipient of the Distel Prize.
Thanks, John. I'm pleased to be with you this morning. It's a huge honor to receive this award and very gratifying.
Finding a way to repair myelin can mean restoring lost function. Dr. Duncan, you were one of the first investigators to focus on how to repair the central nervous system from the damage caused by demyelinating disease. You were one of the first researchers to transplant myelinating cells into the spinal cord of rodents, and you're also credited with providing the evidence that remyelination can restore neurological function. Can you talk about some of your work in investigating myelin repair?
Yeah, I'd be pleased to. When nerve fibers or axons, as they are, lose the myelin sheath, they don't automatically degenerate. They remain there demyelinated. But myelin is responsible for the normal conduction of impulses. And when you lose myelin, the conduction is either slowed or blocked. So they remain there demyelinated for quite some time, perhaps hoping for a myelin sheath to be restored. And that's what got me involved in this work. And, you know, the initial work was that we did and spent many years on was the target that we had in mind were single areas of demyelination or plaques in the spinal cord, in particular in the neck, which we'd shown in animals potentially could be repaired by transplanting in a focal sense cells that make myelin. And we spent a long time investigating this and identifying the cells that could be used, both animal and human cells, that potentially could be used in MS patients. But unfortunately, there was a roadblock in funding with that work. And then serendipitously, I came across a different model in which one could actually look at the body's own cells and their ability to myelinate and remyelinate. So in a sense, the smart way to repair myelin and remyelinate is to enhance the body's own ability to do this. So you have what was called endogenous repair. A lot of effort has been carried out by investigators around the world in looking at the cell that makes myelin, the oligodendrocyte, and its stages of development that can actually take part in remyelination. But there's been a lack in the models in which you can actually test global repair, that is remyelination throughout the brain, spinal cord and optic nerves. And we were fortunate to come across a large animal model where, in fact, the demyelination was extensive throughout all of those structures of the central nervous system. And amazingly, when the animals were, and the cause was removed, as it were, it turned out that these areas remyelinated almost completely. And the animals went from being severely neurologically deficient and then actually recovering fully. So the first thing that this told us, quite remarkably, and it had been thought happens in MS and in other animal models, is that when you get extensive remyelination, neurologic recovery occurs. So remyelination results in neurologic recovery. And that was really important because it had been assumed but not formally proven. So now you have a real target. So remyelination is clearly a major therapeutic target in MS.
You've not only shown that transplanted cells can be effectively used to remyelinate large areas of the central nervous system, but you've also been able to determine which cells were best at doing this kind of work. Can you tell us about that?
Right. So we've moved away from transplanting cells. This is simply enhancing or recruiting the body's own cells. So one of the key issues in exploring the model that we were investigating was, it appeared to me that the remyelination that one saw potentially could arise from remaining cells or oligodendrocytes, mature cells present in areas of demyelination. I won't go into the sort of arcane explanation for this because it'd take too long to explain. But this would really challenge the dogma, which said that the only cell that can actually remyelinate areas of demyelination was a progenitor or stem cell that gives rise to new myelinating oligodendrocytes. So these residing, surviving adult cells were thought to be rather useless. So what the model showed us was, in fact, that that's not the case, that in fact, in the right circumstances, these cells actually can participate in remyelination. And this is important because it provides an additional target for new drugs that could promote its activity compared to the activities of more immature cells. So I think it's important for Big Pharma to also have this in the list of targets in terms of remyelination.
How close are we? And what steps need to be taken? What more do we need to learn in order to say myelin repair is within our grasp and something that we can look forward to?
So it's important to know that there already have been two clinical trials of remyelinating drugs in MS. So this was really a huge step forward. You can actually give a drug which is primary goal was to repair or promote repair remyelination of the nervous system. This had never been done before. You know, all therapies are usually with disease modifying therapies that will have an effect on the immune system and maybe have a secondary effect in remyelination, but not proven. Whereas these two trials specifically targeted promoting remyelination. Now, one was judged not to have worked or had been successful. The second, there was perhaps modest improvement in patients, but I think the main feature here was it's possible to do this. But it's clear that what we need now are more successful drugs that will actually have, you know, major benefits throughout the entire central nervous system. One of the problems has been, and it was with the first two trials, was how do you actually measure the function of or the response of the nervous system to these drugs. It's perhaps unlikely that, you know, you'll hit a home run to begin with, that patients will recover and be able to get up and walk and move and not have balance or vision problems. So they're likely to be intermediate steps. How do you actually monitor this? And one of the issues here has been that while MRI is extremely important in terms of diagnosis and identifying areas of demyelination, inflammation, edema in the brain, MRI falls short in terms of absolutely determining remyelination. So one of the usefulnesses of the model that we were working with was because the optic nerves are so severely affected, as they can be in MS, resulting in optic neuritis, we're actually able to look at the conduction specifically along the optic nerves and show in this model that in demyelination, the speed of conduction was remarkably slow. And then in remyelination, it recovered to near normal. And then we showed indeed that this resulted from complete remyelination of the optic nerves. This had been alluded to, particularly by the group from Queen Square in the early part of the century, but they were careful to state that we can't tell in MS patients if improvement is a result of remyelination. They did the physiology on these animals, the visual evoke, on these patients' visual evoke potential showed, like in the animal model, that this, the lengthened and then shortened as people got better. But formal proof of that this was resulting in remyelination was absent. So now I think from our model system, we can say you can use this visual evoke potential as a monitor of remyelination in the optic nerve and likely throughout the entire central nervous system. And then, of course, we'll be able to compare it with MRI findings. So an outcome measure is important, if not essential, for big pharma to have in judging efficacy of new drugs.
Dr. Ian Duncan, thank you so much for your groundbreaking work in helping us better understand how myelin that's lost due to MS can be repaired and function can be restored. Congratulations again on being named this year's recipient of the Distal Prize for Multiple Sclerosis Research. And thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with me today.
Thank you, John. I'm pleased to be able to talk with you, and I hope that this will help people who are seeking new treatments.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/168. You'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I don't think that I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does the National MS Society. With vital funding from supporters like you, the National MS Society is continuing to meet the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times, while ensuring that the MS research community rebounds quickly from COVID-19, so that the progress and momentum toward finding a cure continues. And that's why I hope that, as you're able, you'll make a donation to the Society's COVID-19 Response Fund. It couldn't be easier. Just text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll consider contributing today, because it's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.